Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. So glad to have you with us today on the Early Morning Late Show. It is me, Bill Arnold, here with you today. And for those of you who are just kind of getting started and getting your day going, welcome. Today is June 13th, and we're so glad you joined us today. If you are just kind of new to the program, welcome. And I just want you to know that the show is just got a new name, just because I thought if I'm going to be behind the microphone, I will tell you a little bit about what that means. The Early Morning Late Show is, I've just spent so many years in late night performing, and then now I'm becoming a morning person. So it's quite a collision of my worlds. It's been a lot of fun. I love being here. I love the opportunity to be here at Faith Radio, and I'm thrilled to be on the air in the morning. And if I can serve you in any way, let me know. If you'd like to hear any kinds of stories or any guests you'd like me to get, email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. I am here to serve you for these 2 hours. And after that, I'm willing to do anything for you as long as it doesn't involve time or money. And as I'm looking at the all the people that listen to us, and I think, boy, there's people in Hartford this morning at 94.1 FM. And I was just reading that Hartford is like one of the coolest, best places to raise kids. So congratulations. The 2017 Kids Count Data Book for the Annie Casey Foundation places Connecticut sixth in the nation overall. So it's a great place to raise kids. On the negative side, the report shows that the number of children living in poverty has risen by 2% since 2015. So a little bit of good news, a little bit of tough news. But the weather around the listening area looks a little bit iffy today. Looks like clouds and could be a little rain and then hot and breezy. So we got everything today. It's summer weather. So that's what we got. I'm going to bring my friend Patrick Albanese on. He helped kind of launch the new name yesterday, and we didn't get around to talking about the news of the day, so I asked, would you come back and we can just talk about what's going on in the news? Then we're going to chat with Sam Sorbo this morning. She has written a book about homeschooling your kids. She was very reluctant, almost against it, until she had her experience, and now she is evangelizing about it and how great it is to do that. And then Dr. Hamada is going to be coming up in the second hour, and there is some cancer drugs, breakthrough chemotherapy drugs that he's going to talk about that, you know, were a year and a half ago, were on the fringe, and today they are frontline, first things they're going to try with people with cancer. And the drug is called Keytruda. That's interesting because my friend George Fraser is on that right now, and he is having unbelievable results from it. As a matter of fact, he went from being diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and they have now changed his status to stage 1. Go figure. And then we're going to talk with my friend Jeff Verdorn in the second hour, and we're going to discuss what Bernie Sanders said when he had that conversation with Russell Vogt and the argument he broke into with him when Russell said, I'm a Christian, and this is what the Bible teaches. And then he just went off the handle on him. So we're going to talk about that as well and talk about the fact that there is a lot of talk in the secular world about universalism. Like, come on, everyone's just going to heaven, right? Come on, let's just be nice to everybody. That's not what the Bible teaches. So I'm going to leave you with Colossians 2:8 before we go to break. See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the elemental spiritual forces of this world, rather than on Christ. Let's keep Jesus the main thing, as we always do here at Faith Radio. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, my friend from West Des Moines, Patrick Albanese.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
And that walk-up music is for none other than Patrick Albanese. Welcome into the batter's box this morning, Patrick.
Yes, I swung the bat with an extra heavy donut this morning.
Good.
So I should wear my glasses because I still can't see. Like, don't throw me just throw me a low hanging curve.
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
Well, let's get started. I appreciate you yesterday coming on the show as we kind of launched the new name of the show. But today I wanted to get you back on and do what we usually do, and that's we hunt through the headlines and find out what's worth talking about and what we can find interesting. And for starters, this New Jersey school district is investigating why President Trump's name was edited out of the two of the students' yearbook's photos. And one student wore a T-shirt that said, Trump, make America great again. The other wore a sweater vest with the president's name on it. Apparently, when the yearbook came out, someone had gone in and photoshopped that out before it was printed, and that's causing all kinds of trouble. Now, personally, I'm grateful for the Photoshop team at my high school that photoshopped my chin acne off.
Oh, yes. Well, and I think that the excuse is going to be, we just don't allow sweater vests. You know?
Right.
It's not a viable clothing option. So yeah. That's what that one was all about.
But they're literally saying that they're going to talk about reissuing the yearbooks. And the teacher that was in charge of the yearbook got suspended, yes.
And you think to yourself, okay, you know, for a number of reasons, you know, we can go into free speech, whatever. You know, the kid wore the shirt, but a school is allowed, if they were to have said ahead of time, you're not allowed to wear, you know, political propaganda. Although I would wager that if you went back to the yearbooks in, you know, 08 and 12, you'd see a lot of Obama.
I bet you shirts. Would.
And they'd be like, this is great. To me, the thing is also, it's like, well, who put you in charge of deciding what is and is not acceptable? If you did not send out a letter that said you can't wear any, you know, political propaganda of any kind, I don't even like using the word propaganda here. It's just a shirt. Then why do you get to make these decisions? That's kind of taking an awful lot of authority upon yourself, saying I disagree with this and I'm not going to check with anybody. I'm just going to do it. I think they made the right move. And besides, it's pretty hard to fire a teacher these days, so they must have taken it very seriously.
Yeah. Well, the Warriors won last night big, so they are now the NBA champs. And I read where a guy paid for two tickets courtside, $133,000 last night to watch the game.
Yeah, I cannot believe I got outbid on those.
I know.
That was amazing. I tapped out at $11.50. But that was per ticket, by the way.
Right.
Then that guy just went right away and said, look, this guy's going to be chasing me for weeks. Let me just put down $133,000. That ought to get rid of him. And it did.
Yeah, exactly. And I love the fact that the Warriors won. I was a fan watching that. I love their team. And then LeBron James, what an amazing athlete he is. And, you know, he earned $84 million this year. Talk about the agony of defeat.
You think I know the agony of defeat? Well, actually, I live it every day. Mm-hmm. I have not made $84 million for anything. You know what? I mean, LeBron got a ring last year. It was a great series, and there was a part of me that kind of wanted Golden State to sweep just to have that sort of history-setting sweeping through every round of playoffs. Mm-hmm. It would have been really nice to see. It would have been fun. I enjoy stuff like that. When the Patriots had that 16-0 season but lost the Super Bowl, whether you're a Patriot fan or not, you go, I kind of like watching history. Sports history is just as much fun as watching other history be made. So that would have been enjoyable. LeBron, I don't know. I mean, he's getting up there in years, but he's moved around a bit and he's done well. And maybe next year he'll just sign with Golden State.
All right, Patrick.
They need more firepower.
Yeah. Okay. A Pakistani man is headed to death row over a post on Facebook. This guy recently received this sentence after being convicted of insulting the Prophet Muhammad. Now, his defense attorney says that the prosecutors made sure to charge him under multiple sections of the law to make sure he'd get the harshest sentence possible.
There's a part of me that's kind of curious that a country that would actually sentence somebody to death for a Facebook post would even allow Facebook in the first place.
Yeah, no kidding.
Are they really for any kind of free speech or free and open anything? Now, I've seen people, you know, get pretty upset about Facebook posts, but this might be a little bit extreme. He blasphemed?
They don't say exactly what he said, but I would imagine the fact you're insulting him could be done any number of ways.
Sure. I mean, we know that just a cartoon has led to ISIS attacks, and there was that Garland, Texas incident a couple of years back where they said, we're going to have a Draw Muhammad Day, and a couple of guys showed up to shoot some people. Unfortunately, they picked Texas, and everybody there was armed, so they were able to defend themselves, and we ended up with, I think, two dead terrorists.
Yeah. But, now, we just have a minute before we're going to go to break, but there was an interesting conversation when Russell Vought was being considered for a position, and he was being interrogated by Bernie Sanders, and he was being asked about his faith, and he said, well, I'm a Christian, and then Bernie was saying, well, if you are a Christian, does that mean all Muslims are condemned and all Jews are condemned? And he got very heated about that, and you connected some interesting dots about the vetting process and your comment about would Bernie Sanders do that with other groups?
Yeah, we should just if we're, you know, since he's made the ground rules, we should call it the Bernie Sanders protocol and say, you know what, Bernie, what a great idea, the religious test, because obviously that's important to you. Let's vet refugees this way and say, now, if you were to come to America and somebody were to say, gosh, I left Islam, should they be executed? Is a sentence of death acceptable to you? Is that something that you believe? Because as we understand it, that might be something that's in the Quran. We're just kind of curious.
Mm-hmm.
Call it the Bernie Sanders test. He's never passed a test in his life. But.
All right, Patrick, we'll take a little break when we come back. Lots more. It's 16 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning. Bill Arnold with you. Be right back. Good morning. 19 minutes after the hour, Bill Arnold here talking to my friend Patrick Albanese from prestigious West Des Moines. Patrick, the Trump-like Julius Caesar assassination in New York, that play, they're losing some sponsors.
Yeah, but the New York Times has decided to kind of stick it out, it appears.
Yeah, and they're staying in.
And by Time Warner. You know, look, they can do whatever they want. The reason why Donald Trump is president of the United States is because of this type of thing where a huge chunk of America is a little tired of having people claim this moral superiority that they know what's best. And they're throwing a temper tantrum that has now lasted for, about 8 months. It's getting up there where you say, my goodness, you know, a 10-year-old eventually tires of throwing a tantrum. And this is, to me, is just another tantrum. But if you expect there to not be a double standard, you're kind of fooling yourself. Obviously, if somebody had done something equivalent with Barack Obama, there would have been screams. And, you know, I choose not to watch this kind of stuff. It's kind of this assassination chic where I see people are kind of gleeful about this. And I say, well, you're a very small minority. You're a very small minority of people that think that it's pretty neat to take a classic play and turn it into an anti-Trump rant. It's getting old.
Yeah. In the play, Roman senators fear that Caesar has become power hungry, so they stab him to death. And, of course, that is played by, that's Donald Trump that they're stabbing. And Delta said the artistic and creative direction crossed the line on the standards of good taste. Well, good for Delta.
Well, good for Delta. And, and Delta's big enough where, in the airlines, they kind of be like, they don't have to care. It says if you want to go through Atlanta, you got to use Delta. So they almost have a monopoly. And so I appreciate a company that is as big as that, that's saying, we're not going to lose anybody, but let's just make a statement because this is bad. Mm-hmm. I admire that more because.
Yeah. What would have happened if this play was portraying Barack Obama as this person being stabbed because of a power grab?
Well, besides the fact that it would have never been conceptualized,
that's true,
let alone made, it would have lasted approximately half of one performance, which you and I are very familiar with.
Yes, we are. We are.
Plus about half of one performance, like, that maybe didn't go so well.
But it continues because now the hit show Roseanne is going to be rebooted to take on the Trump era. They're back at
Isn't it amazing? Yeah, that's what it took to get Roseanne out of retirement. Donald Trump getting elected. So, depending on whether or not you are for or against Roseanne, that might say if you're for or against Trump, I think what what surprises me, and shouldn't surprise me, is there's almost an arrogance with these celebrities that by virtue of the fact that they have millions of dollars in the bank, they say to themselves, I must be smart because I got a lot of money. Smart mm-hmm. people. Yeah. Rich people must be smart. And they think, you know what the world needs is my opinion on this because I am that smart because look at all my money. And I'm just going to kind of dust off the old show and turn it into an anti-Trump sitcom. I don't imagine that's going to last more than a couple episodes.
Mm-hmm.
That's me. You know, I didn't even know the world was hankering for Roseanne to come on back. I thought they were kind of done. The show ran its course and we've moved on.
Yeah. And TV's favorite dad might be spending the rest of his life in jail. Bill Cosby is now awaiting his fate. The trial is now at rest. The jury is out making a decision. And the defense rested after 6 minutes where his defense lawyer practically teared up. And bailed after yep. 6 minutes. I'm thinking, did you hire the right guy?
I don't know if you hired the right guy. It seems to me that his entire defense was, this is Cliff Huxtable.
I know.
It's Cliff Huxtable. Yeah, I don't know. Felicia Rashad, she married Ahmad Rashad, and he was a great football player. Hey, I don't know what he was. I've never heard of anything taking, 6 minutes. The only thing I can imagine, he just said, hey, come on, folks, cut Bill some slack here, just a little bit. Mm-hmm. He's getting up in years, and he was America's favorite dad. And it was such a great show. It was such a great show. And I as a kid, I don't know if your dad would make you listen to Bill Cosby records. My dad would put on the Bill Cosby or Bob Newhart albums, and we would listen to him over and over again. And I grew up, you know, just adoring this man. And mm-hmm. It's hard to hold on to that adoration. You almost have to go, can I separate his work from the crime that he was accused of? It's tough.
Yeah.
It's, you know, our heroes fall. Yes. Our heroes fall. We're putting faith in the earthly. It's not a good idea.
And speaking of fallen heroes, Adam West just died this week, and he was Batman, of course, when we were kids. And I always found him to be an interesting character. He had no superpowers. He got beat up a lot.
Like, yeah.
Yet we loved him.
Well, yeah, but what he always had going for him is that it turns out that bad guys are very impatient. They don't want to sit around and watch you meet your demise.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, all right, I got the contraption set up. I will just be cutting out, and good luck to you and Robin over there.
Right. Right.
I mean, every time. You know, it's funny how the show has come back, and you say, gosh, it was great as a kid. Then it got corny when you got to be a teenager, and as an adult, you say, God, was that show ever clever?
It was.
Yeah.
And of course, the criminals back then were more easily identifiable. I mean, here's a guy in a full body green suit with question marks on it. Those guys are easier to pick up.
Yeah. Well, first off, you know, how many places can make – maybe these guys are just good seamstresses and can sew their own costumes because – You know, I would, if I were the police, I'd go to every costume shop and say, if anybody comes in ordering a green suit with question marks on it, could you just give us a little heads up on that one? That might be the Riddler.
That could have been the Riddler. Patrick, thanks so much for being on the show. I appreciate it. Have a great day. I'll talk to you again real soon.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks so much. It is 26 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Sam Sorbo about homeschooling. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 30 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here on the Early Morning Late Show. So glad you're with us. If you are just getting up, good morning. And if you know, I always think of the people that work that late shift that are up all night working. They're just getting home. So this is their late night going to bed. We're thinking and caring about you too. We'll take a short break and be right back with news. And then Sam Sorbo's up next. It is 33 minutes past the hour. Forgiveness does not mean condoning someone's wrong words or actions. Brant Hansen speaks to this in his book, How to Be Unoffendable.
People will think, oh, you're saying everything's okay then. I'm just supposed to be okay with everything. No, forgiveness says it's not okay. The very act of forgiveness presumes something has gone wrong here. Something has been done that is wrong. it's not looking past right and wrong or acting. It's not relativism, acting like it doesn't matter. No, quite the opposite. God's forgiveness on the cross does not say it didn't matter. That was a bloody scene on a hill. It said it matters. Yes, it matters. Forgiveness always matters. The interesting opportunity, though, in a culture that's like that, that is constantly offended, and that's left and right, by the way, politically. It doesn't matter. Everybody's offended all the time. How refreshing would it be if the people who were most acquainted with human nature didn't get taken aback by it all the time? If we weren't disgusted by people because we know humans are broken. Jesus knew how people think. He knew how they thought. He knew what was in their hearts. We know. We don't have to be shocked. This is life. We should know it better than anybody. Cain and Abel. I mean, people can murder. People can do horrible things. Got it. Yes, we know. We know as well as anybody. And yet, God wasn't offended and he didn't take off. He entered into our mess. He decided to be born into a barn full of animal manure and decided to embrace us instead of walking away. I mean, we should be the people who are the least offendable people because we know our own status with God, and we also know what human nature is actually like. It's broken.
If you want to hear that full interview, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, search Unoffendable. Brant Hansen's a very interesting guy, and he delivers well, and he writes beautifully. So I've read that book, How to Be Unoffendable. It is a good read. So I recommend that. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Sam Sorbo. You might know her husband a little bit better than her, but she is the wife of Kevin Sorbo, Hercules, among other things. And they've got a new movie coming out in the fall. And also, she's written a book on homeschooling. We're going to talk to her in just a minute.
It disturbs me that church auditoriums are described more often by how many they can seat rather than by how many they can equip for service. This is Jim Garlow. Perhaps the greatest hindrance to lay training is a faulty view of the church building as a center for nurture rather than a center for equipping and enabling. The church building is often viewed as a mess hall rather than an armory to be outfitted for spiritual warfare. What could happen if lay ministry were taken seriously? For one, the minister would be referred to as the enabler, the person responsible for the enabling equipping process. We'd have nothing short of a revolution that would be welcomed by every under-challenged layperson and every overworked pastor. The task of the ordained is to teach and equip the unordained for ministry, to train all God's people for ministry. There's more at jimgarlow.com. We'll do our part, keeping you informed at jimgarlow.com.
Welcome back to the show. Bill Arnold here. You know, they're your kids when it comes to figuring out what you're going to do with their education and everything else. You get to make the decisions. And my guest, Sam Sorbo, has written a book called They're Your Kids, An Inspirational Journey from Self-Doubter to Homeschool Advocate. And Sam is originally from Pittsburgh. So I first want to ask her if she's supporting the Pittsburgh Penguins. I assume the answer is yes. And she has also studied biomedical engineering at Duke University and then became a model. So go figure. She traveled and learned five different languages. And then she was, we'll tell you about more of her life in just a minute, but let's first get her on the show. Sam, hi.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, awesome book. You've got so much going on right now. I hardly know where to begin. You've written a book. You've got a big movie coming out that you've written and produced. Called Let There Be Light, and you're actually just, you kind of do it all, so congratulations.
Thank you. I sort of fell into home education. The school was failing my son. They just weren't, and in fact, I would tell parents that they weren't really, really failing. They were just failing, like enough for me to get a little irked. And I'll tell the story. My kid was in second grade, and he turned in a book report every month, and we never got them back. And I was one of the, you know, helping parents. I was there almost all the time, like almost every day. I was doing something at the school, kind of thing. And I would hang out with the teacher after school and help her clean up or just chat very often. And 5 months in, we turned in our fifth book report, and I happened to say to the teacher, just off the cuff, "Hey, how are Brain's book reports?" And she said, without batting an eye, "Not very good," which I thought she was joking at first.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no, really, not very good. And I'm like, well, you didn't think that maybe that was something you should bring to my attention?
Wow.
And every excuse that I came up for with for her sort of made it worse. Oh, she's too distracted. That doesn't help. She's got too many kids. That also doesn't help me. Do you know what I mean? Like
yes.
She doesn't care? No, clearly not. That doesn't make sense. And so I started doing his book reports with him every day after school. And I realized I was homeschooling.
Yeah. So there was the transition right before your eyes as it was happening.
That was the beginning. And then I realized with all the travel that we do, we really started homeschooling because we travel a great deal. But I was homeschooling before I started homeschooling, as most parents are, because if you do homework with your child, you're homeschooling. You're just doing it at the end of the day when everybody's tired and cranky and hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Let me know how that works for you, you know. And so I brought the kids home, and with great trepidation, I was very nervous.
I bet.
I was exceedingly anxious over this because I went through the system, and the system teaches us that we're not capable. The system is very much designed to tell us that we are only able to do the things that we've been taught. Well, we've never been taught to teach, which is really a failure of the system,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. But in any case, I did it. I just thought, and I said to Kevin, and I would tell parents, commit to a semester. Don't even commit to a year. Just say, we're just going to try it for 3 months. We'll give it a shot. We'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not convinced after 3 months, keep doing it. No, I'm. but I was convinced after a month. I was like, wow, the change in my children, the change in my children's behavior. Our schools teach ageism, and so my oldest was like lording it over my other two because he was the big man at school kind of thing, and that changed. I became much more intricately involved in the education of my children, even though I considered that I already was when I was working at the school. But frankly, at the school, I was working on behalf of all the other kids. Now I could focus primarily on my child.
Wow.
And children.
Mm-hmm.
It just shifted everything. And it was so this is what I do in the book. The first part of the book is somewhat of an indictment of our education system because it's failing. Everybody admits it's failing, but nobody agrees that we can do anything about it except give it more money. It's like this insatiable beast that eats money but doesn't actually produce anything but crap because we're graduating kids who can't read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's astonishing what we are allowing the schools to get away with. And one of the biggest things is we don't teach civics in our schools anymore. So think about this for a moment. We don't teach civics, so our children don't understand the role of government in their lives. For this reason, they're graduating fully accepting of socialism to a large degree, which is why Bernie Sanders did so well in the last election. And why is that? Why do they believe that the role of government should be bigger and bigger in society instead of our inherited government, which should be small and not intrusive? And we have governance by the people in this country, but that's not what they're learning. They're learning that government should be bigger and stronger. Why is that? Because the government's teaching them.
Hmm. Very interesting, Sam. I had a guy that I went to high school with that actually sued the high school because they graduated him, and when they did so, he was still illiterate.
There are several cases like that. And do you know how they always end?
No. How do they?
The judge rules in favor of the school because it is still the parent's responsibility to educate the child.
Bingo. So you're suggesting to reconsider the idea of homeschooling as the best alternative out there.
Well, I'm telling you, it's still your responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
They're still your kids.
Right.
And so dropping them off at school is absolutely no guarantee. It's no guarantee. The biggest thing that people hit me with is, well, what about socialization? There's no guarantee that your child will make friends at school. In fact, the odds are against it. They're put into a Lord of the Flies situation with 30 other kids. what hope do they have? I mean, seriously.
Right.
What hope do they have for learning manners? They're not going to learn manners
from
sixth graders.
No. And it's interesting, too, because I remember going to school and I would see kids that would be bullied and then they'd go home, and home was kind of a safe refuge. It was sort of the place where you sort of reconnected. But nowadays with social media, you can get bullied at school. The minute you get home, you open up Facebook and you're still getting bullied.
Yeah, it's relentless. Yeah.
Yeah, it just doesn't end. So fascinating. Your story is, and how you came about this is really, really interesting. Tell me more about what you're learning and how excited have your kids been to get out of the schools and to be homeschooled?
Well, I've been doing it now since second grade. My son's entering 11th, so he's almost done.
Wow.
Supporting him. It's been an amazing journey. I will tell you that I would not have produced this movie if I wasn't a homeschooler.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the parent takes responsibility for the child, full responsibility, everything shifts. And the relationship between the parent and the child also shifts. And so I have an extraordinary relationship, I would say, with my children because we're so involved. When you drop your child off at school, the child intrinsically understands that you are abdicating your responsibility. They intrinsically understand this. And I know that this is what society tells us to do, and I'm not impugning the motives of the parent. This is how we were raised. We're raised to bring our kids back to the school. But if you feel incapable of educating a third grader, you have to ask yourself why you, as somebody who is educated in that system, is a product of that system, and yet is incapable of educating a third grader, would send your child back into that system.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, we do travel a lot. My kids are extraordinarily socialized. They will have a conversation with you about anything and everything, including politics.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very well read. They have a pretty good idea about what's going on. They're still juveniles, so they still come up with really kind of fancy arguments that don't hold water. But we're working on that.
Well, we all did that.
It's been an amazing journey, and I go into it in the book. And so the second half of the book deals with how I got my start, where I went for curriculum, what I think of, you know, the stuff that I use, and how successful or unsuccessful it's been, and the various sort of, you know, all my efforts, what worked, what didn't work, little tips and tricks of how I got it done. And, you know, I'm just trying to share with parents a glimpse into what homeschooling looks like so that it doesn't look like this foreign beastie thing. For us, as going through the system and coming out of that system, we think homeschooling is like this scary, scary thing, and it shouldn't be, and it isn't.
Yeah.
So well, I want to empower parents to take the reins.
Yeah, Sam.
The blessings that flow from this are indescribable. They're so great, and you know, I mean, well, anyway, go ahead.
I just want to ask some specifics. I want to go to break when we come back. I want to ask some specifics about homeschooling. And come on, I can't do that. I work full time. We'll take a short break and be right back. I'm talking to Sam Sorbo. Be back in just a minute. Welcome back to the program. We're talking to Sam Sorbo, a very lively conversation about homeschooling. Sam, okay, let's say I work full-time. I can't. I don't have time for this, and I'm scared to consider this.
Scared to consider it and don't have time for it are two separate things. It's important to prioritize is my best answer. It's very important to prioritize. Now, if you literally, you know, you're the sole provider for your family and you work a full-time job and that's all that you can do, then that's all that you can do. I can't solve that for you, right?
Right.
But I will tell you that there are myriad of ways to homeschool. So there are co-ops. Look, I have a friend who, he also works full-time. He didn't have time to home educate. His wife was not into it. She was not going to do it. So instead of sending his kids to the expensive private school, which was really his only other option because the public schools in his area were really bad, he had the wherewithal to hire out-of-work or retired, I should say, teachers. And so he provided the curriculum for them. They came into his home every day for 4 hours, educated his children, one teacher per child, and it was less than the tuition at the local private school.
Mm, wow.
And I would tell you that his daughter just graduated Harvard as an example of how successful they were in that endeavor. There are many ways to get it done. So you don't have to hire, and you can hire a mom who homeschools her children. And a lot of moms who homeschool are kind of looking for a little co-op situation where they can have a little bit of extra cash on the side because they are, you know, dedicating their lives to their kids and they don't have the extra money that comes from just going out of the home and getting another job.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of different ways to get it done. I can't solve everyone's problem for them. I'm just saying if you prioritize, you'll find a way.
Sam, I have a question because I know we have a lot of teachers that listen to the program, and we're obviously not bashing them, are we? But we're just concerned about the kids that are losing in a failing system. Do you have a word for
that? No, I'm talking about the system.
Yes, I know we are. I know we are.
And
they're in that system.
Failing the teachers.
Oh, please.
The system fails the teachers.
Okay.
When it takes the power away from the teachers and gives the teachers no power to effectuate things inside the classroom, and then saddles the teacher with 25 students and all the work that has to be done. And Common Core's been a horrible addition to this equation. You know, we're asking for far too much from our teachers. I don't blame the teachers in any of this. I mean, there are bad teachers. They need to go, obviously. I'm not saying that every teacher is fantastic, but most of our teachers are dedicated to the education of children. And I would encourage the teachers, start a co-op in your area. Say, look, I'm retiring from teaching because that system doesn't work, but I will take your children on an individual basis and educate them. Even in a group, I can, you know, you can educate 12 children and keep the parents involved. Don't take the responsibility from the parent, but administer to the parent, I would say, in the education of the child. And in fact, I belong to a co-op that does this. I do classical conversations. By the way, for your listeners, you can go to homeschoolnowusa.org or .com. I think it's both.
Okay.
Homeschool Now USA has lots of information just about homeschooling in general.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I do classical conversations. They have a paradigm. We meet once a week for a full day. Up until just recently, I was tutoring a class of seventh graders, so I had 12 seventh graders every day for a full day. We went through six different lines of study, and then the rest of the week, the parents were in charge. There's a whole book that comes with it that tells you basically what you should cover every day for every subject, but in the meantime, the parent is responsible, and so the parent knows the child. And, you know, I had parents in my class who were like, look, my kid's just not going to get the essay done this week. We had way too much. We had people visiting. We did volunteer work or whatever. And so they were in charge, and they could just say to me, expect the essay or don't expect the essay. And as the tutor, I came alongside and helped them get the job of education done with their kids.
Okay.
I will tell you that I just came out with another tool. It's a book. It's coming out in August. It's called Teach from Love, and it's a devotional to teach godly characteristics to our children because they're not learning that in school.
Wow, that's great.
And what they're learning in school is secular humanism, which it basically teaches them that they are pure accidents and survival of the fittest is true.
Yeah. Sam, I'm just curious about the blessings and the better results that come from homeschooling. This must be one of them, what you're just talking about, the fact that you can speak biblical and godly truth into their lives.
Oh, of course. Look, if you send your child to a secular humanist school for 5 days a week and they're doing secular work out of secular workbooks and they're learning all about evolution and Darwin and survival of the fittest, what's your argument then to say that ISIS is wrong? You're raising young people to believe that what ISIS is doing is actually right. It may not be good, but there is no moral standard for good
right
anymore
as
with secular humanism. Can I just tell your listeners, if you text 59400, you can get a free download of my new devotional that's coming out. I want this. I would love to see this in all the schools. It goes through the various godly characteristics that we want our children to emulate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Bible devotional. But, you know, if you're a teacher at a Christian school, there's no reason you can't do this. I did this with my class of seventh graders. You're putting this in the forefront of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, honesty. Why are we honest? How are we honest? What does honesty look like? And what happens if you're not honest? There are consequences to our actions, right? And so having these discussions with your children 10 minutes a day, 15 minutes a day, to engender these qualities, because otherwise they're not going to get them. And, I mean, I did this as a tool for homeschoolers, but then I realized who really needs this? The homeschoolers are teaching Bible and stuff, right? But
yeah, exactly.
In our schools, we're not doing that. So
yeah.
Text 59400, it'll ask you for your email, and then it'll send you a PDF sample of the book. The book comes out in August. I'm very excited about it, actually. It's really pretty and sweet. And it's going to be a great tool for parents.
Yes. Now, we just have about
a teachers, I should say.
Yeah, a little less than a minute left. And Sam, I'm curious, what is the number one objection that you get when it comes to homeschooling? Would people say, hey, you're sheltering your kid?
The first thing that they say is, what about socialization? How is your child going to make any friends? My children do very well in the friend category. Not all children do. Some children, and that's why homeschooling kind of got a bad rap, because it was children who really couldn't survive in the school setting started the homeschool movement. But now it's very mainstream. And so if you, as a homeschooler, you join a co-op, you go to homeschool park days, you do your Bible study. We have a homeschool version of our Bible study that I do every week, and the kids do it. And so we're studying the Bible together.
Separately.
I mean, it's fantastic. There are so many blessings from keeping your children home. And the biggest blessing, I would say, is my kids are my retirement, and I'm going to be friends with them for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very funny. You're just a remarkable you're a remarkable woman. Your husband, I don't know who he is, but he must be a very lucky guy.
My husband's an awesome guy. I'm a very lucky woman.
I know. I would like to talk about that as well. We'll get you on the show again, like, soon, and we'll talk about a project that's coming up with your husband in the fall. How's that?
Yes, go to samsorbo.com if you want any more information.
All right.
Samsorbo.com. Thanks so much.
Yeah, have a great day. All right, we'll take a break and be right back.